Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Today is Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. The time is 9:01 a.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this morning, Co-Chairman Hoffman.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Majority Leader Machicki.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Education Chair Stevens. We should be joined shortly by Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Olson. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? We have three items on today's agenda: SB 155, Real Estate Appraiser Management Companies; SB 65, Jonesville Public Use Area; and HB 236, Senior Benefit Program. The first item on today's agenda is SB 155. This bill was heard on 2/21 and on 3/6/2018. We had a bill presentation. The public hearing was opened and closed. We adopted a previous CS. Senator Bishop, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 155, version 30-LS1295/Oscar before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of understanding the changes. Ms. Lucky, if you could place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. You should have received from our office both the work draft version O and an explanation of changes, which I will be using for my presentation this morning. The changes in the new CS address some of the discussion items that the committee brought up at the previous meeting and also makes a change for clarity. The change for clarity will be found in Section 4, page 3, lines 24 to 29. The wording of the section is substantially similar, but it has been broken up into B, 1, 2, and 3 in order to clarify what are the board's authorities versus what the real estate appraisal management companies are required to do. The second, the second change is on page 5, line 25. And as the committee may recall, there was some discussion about whether a certified appraiser needed to be actively certified in the state, which would be in the state of Alaska, versus in any state. The language there has been changed to reflect that a person must be actively certified in a state, which would allow an appraiser certified in any state to be the controlling person in Alaska. I'm sorry if that might have been confusing. I'm happy to clarify that a little bit more, but I know that there was a lot of discussion in committee regarding this topic.
Is there questions on the CS? Is there other changes?
There's one more change, I'm sorry. And then the last change is probably the most confusing change. It is actually sections 8 through section 12 of the bill, and that is regarding the effective dates. And I'm not necessarily going to go over that in order, but I will explain what these accomplish. As you may recall, during the discussion in the last committee, there was some concern that the federal government has a requirement that these regulations and laws be in place by August 10th of this year. The department has requested an extension. However, that extension won't be granted until after our legislative session is over. The sponsor was concerned that by changing the date to a later date, we might not meet our federal requirements. Therefore, the effective date sections are as follows. Should we not receive the extension, the bill will go into effect on August 10th of 2018 as required by the federal law. However, should the extension be granted, and the department assures me that it is almost a certainty, however, it will just need to be rubber stamped in May, the effective date of the bill will be January 1st of 2019. However, if you look on the applicability section in Section 8 of the bill, which is on page 10, it states that the act will take effect January 1st, 2019. However, the department may not enforce the registration requirement until March 1st, 2019. And what that does is that allows all of the application and registration requirements to be in place. It allows a two-month application period for the appraisal management companies to submit their applications and for the department to do their due diligence in looking at the applications, and then the requirement to be registered would not kick in until March 1st, 2019. These changes were made at the request of the department in order to allow, if the extension was granted by the federal government, adequate time for them to get their processes in place and ensure that none of the mortgages that are the appraisals that are done in that period would be invalidated for any reason. That concludes the presentation of the CS manager.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Meyer, would you like to approach the microphone? Do you have any comments on the CS?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Senator Meyer from representing South Anchorage. We are in complete agreement with all the changes in the CS, Madam Chair. Thank you.
If you could stay at the microphone for just a moment, I'll remove my objection for adoption of the CS. Is there further objections to adopting the CS for Senate Bill 155, Finance /O? Seeing and hearing none, the CS is before the committee. Ms. Lucky, could you cover the fiscal note for me?
Yes, ma'am. Again, for the record, Julie Lucky, staff to Senator McKinnon. The fiscal note, the numbers of the fiscal notes have not changed from the previous fiscal note. However, there was some concern that the fiscal note implied that a full position would be needed in order to accommodate the changes by this bill. Therefore, the language in the fiscal note has been changed to reflect that the new position would serve as an occupational licensing examiner over multiple existing programs as well as the new program. The position's cost would be spread among those programs through positive timekeeping. Therefore, we feel the fiscal note accurately reflects that only a partial position would be needed to implement the new changes by this bill.
Senator Mashicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this will position, third of a position will be partnered with several other licensing responsibilities, and just clarify that there is no UGF. This is all receipt services on the fiscal note. Is that correct?
Ms. Lucky.
Madam Chairman, Senator Mashicki, I think it was said on the record that it was one-third. I cannot attest to that. I don't know if we have a departmental person online that can answer that question, but I can confirm that it would be all receipt-supported services, and I think a third to a half was accurate, that they're unsure exactly how much work this would need, but they know it would not be a full position.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Senator Mashicki. Thank you, Ms. Lucky. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senator Meyer, would you like to speak to your bill? I would note that we have people that are asking to testify on this bill. The public hearing was open two different times. We do understand that controlling person is an issue for our board. Other boards across the United States handle this particular issue in varying ways. And we did distribute a document from Mr. Derry to all committee members regarding controlling person points last night, or I believe he may have emailed everyone. So we are aware of the board's request. Senator Meyer, any comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I think we've discussed this bill pretty thoroughly. Again, Alaska is just one of four states that haven't made this change yet, so and of course the deadline is coming up August of this year, and you know, with the new language that the CS has added, does give us a little more flexibility, which is good if we need that, and I think some of the concern was on the surety bond, and I think we've the 50,000 is a good number that we've fallen on, so I think the committee's done excellent work on the bill, and thank you very much for the committee's time.
Senator Bishop, may I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the Senate Bill 155, version 30-LS1295, /Oscar from committee with the accompanying fiscal note and committee recommendations.
Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, the CS for Senate Bill 155, Finance, /O, with attached fiscal notes and individual committee recommendations, move from committee. Brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on the record. If you're joining us off-net or online, we're in Alaska State Capitol, Room 532, Senate Finance. The next item before us is Senate Bill 65. I'd like to invite Senator Schauer, as well as his staff, Jake Almeida, to the microphone. Welcome to Senate Finance, Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, Senator Mike Schauer, District E, speaking to Senate Bill 65, the Jonesville Public Use Area. If you drive north out of Palmer, Alaska, you'll run into the small town of Sutton. It's home to a very beautiful area that's called the Coal Hills. It is 11,000 acres, and it was reclaimed mostly from mining, coal mining, done back in the 1920s. There's been a large uptick in use of that area as it has become more popular, and the Mat-Su Valley has continued to grow. There is a lack of defined activity zones, and we've run into a lot of dangerous conditions. Right now, if you go there locally, you'll hear it referred to as the Wild West from Sutton. It's now a serious public safety concern for a number of reasons. Some of these are, and they're not all inclusive, litter, drugs, abandoned and burned public vehicles. They do about 20 truck and trailer loads a year, local volunteers to remove that garbage from that area. Firearm discharges across trails, camping areas, and neighborhoods. Multiple injuries from hiker vehicle collisions. Several injuries from unsafe firearm discharges, and we had one fatal shooting in the area not too long ago. The Mat-Su has about 36 officers to patrol an area the size of West Virginia. That's an exceedingly difficult task, as you're well aware. A busy summer weekend, you can see upwards of 300 RVs, 400 vehicles, and up to 1,500 people using this area simultaneously with no plan to manage it. We believe a PUA is needed to help improve public safety and access to this once pristine recreational area. A similar effort was accomplished in the Kinnick River Valley area, which had the same problems developing as the population increased, and the use of the Kinnick River area had skyrocketed. The Mat-Su Borough credits the improved conditions of the Kinnick River usage area to the establishment of the Kinnick River Pub Use Area in 2006 and the associated management plan. Senate Bill 65 establishes the Jonesville Public Use Area to, and again not an all-inclusive list, protect, maintain, enhance, and perpetuate the current use of the site, year-round general public use, protect and maintain habitats for fish and wildlife, use of off-road vehicles, access for miners and owners of private property. The intent of Senate Bill 65 is to increase public safety while preserving the recreational use for all Alaskans. I respectfully request your support for Senate Bill 65. At this time, if there are no further questions for myself, I would like to hand this over to my staffer, Jake Almeida, and he will brief you on the sectional analysis. And this is his first testimony to a committee.
Are there questions to the sponsor of the need for the bill? Mr. Almeida, if you could walk us through the sectional.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jake Almeida, staff to Senator Schauer. I'll be going over a brief sectional analysis as well as an explanation of changes to the bill if the committee wishes. There are only two sections to this bill, and most of the effects of the bill are taking place under Section 1. I'll now go through briefly each of the newly proposed statutes. Section 1 will create the Jonesville Public Use Area, and all subsequent parts of the section conform to the creation of the public use area itself. Section 1 establishes new statutes under Alaska Statutes 4123280 through 4123289. Proposed new law 4123280 establishes the purpose of a public use area. Proposed new law 4123282 provides for the management of the surface and subsurface estate to be managed by Department of Natural Resources and Fish and Game, and will be managed by Fish and Game, and also clarifies that the public use area is not part of the state park system. Proposed new law 4123284 provides for the type of uses that may and may not be prohibited in the public use area. Proposed new law 4123286 defines the boundaries of the public use area. And if you look in your binder, there's also a map that we provided for each of the committee members that defines exactly what those boundaries look like. Proposed new law 4123288 describes who has enforcement authority for violations committed. And proposed new law 4123289 states that the penalty is a violation as defined in Alaska Statutes 1181900 and requires the Supreme Court to create a bail schedule for those violations. And under Section 2 only is the uncodified law that directs the Supreme Court to create a bail schedule within 90 days after the management plan is adopted. That concludes the sectional analysis, Madam Chair. If the committee wishes, I can also go over an explanation of changes for the CS from the Resources Committee.
We do not need an explanation of the changes from Resource. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, are there any roads in this area, and who's responsible for maintaining them?
Through the chair, good morning, Senator. There are a few roads, but they're mostly trails. At this time, they're not maintained. There is one road, the Jonesville Road, that exits off of the Glen Highway, and that road is maintained by the state normally as it is any other road that the state would maintain. That stops just about 100 to 200 yards past the end of that neighborhood, and then it just becomes what is essentially the unmaintained trails, with the exception of the local volunteers that have been trying to maintain that for the last few years.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Senator Hoffman.
And are these trails used by RVs?
Senator Schauer.
Through the chair. Senator, they are used by RVs. There's a number of trails that they do go back into, and ATVs, snow machines, et cetera.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry. Yes.
Senator Juan Imhoff.
Thank you. So on page 2, line 6, it says the commissioner is responsible for the management. I'm assuming this is the commissioner of DNR?
Through the chair, yes, Senator, that is the commissioner of DNR.
Okay. And then on line 8, it says after adequate public hearings. I'm assuming these public hearings will start after this bill is passed and it becomes a public use area. Then they'll start these hearings?
Senator Schauer.
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, Senator, that is correct. Once the DNR commissioner decides to establish a management plan, if he chooses to do so, then they would open it up to public testimony as they created the management plan with the help of the Matsu Borough.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So this usually, similar with Kinnick, it takes about a year, maybe a year and a half or so, a lot of public testimony, a lot of input. Then they incorporate a comprehensive plan based on what they heard and what people want and so forth. Is that correct?
Senator Schauer.
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, Madam Chair, there is, they estimate, if you look in the back of the packet, it's buried away, is somewhere between 3 to 5 years. They estimate it would probably take to actually execute the plan and create a management plan they could use.
Last question. Senator Von Imhoff.
And then you mentioned that the parking lot right now is 300 cars or so. I'm assuming that with this plan, there may be a fiscal note eventually in a few years when they want to expand the parking lot, upgrade the parking lot, maybe put lights in the parking lot, maybe put bathrooms, permanent bathrooms, et cetera. Do you see that happening?
Senator Schauer.
Through the chair. Yes, Senator. Down the road, if the DNR commissioner decided to execute the management plan, there would possibly be a fiscal note attached to it. If you look at the Kinnick River public use area, what happened with that one is there was funding at the time when there was more money available, and they did fund extra hours for the troopers to enforce the regulations. And so it would depend on whether or not the funding was available to actually execute that management plan. And so that would be an indeterminate fiscal note at this time, but I would imagine that if they decided to do that, possibly that would happen, but there are 5 other personal use areas that the state has established that do not have funding or enforcement that takes place currently.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the letter from the commissioner, says that the process would take 5 years without additional funding or 3 years with an appropriation of $166,000 for the next 2 years to support additional staff and contract work. But I don't know what the vision is, but I think Alaskans have to get used to, in a lot of the parks, we have entrance or parking fee. And if people want those services locally, hopefully in the scoping and public meetings, they have that discussion. People can define what they want for services, but with our current state of affairs, it's not free. And we'll see We'll see if the public steps up and decides that is something they want to see in the future. Otherwise, we're going to continue to add public use areas that have no services. And I don't know what that turns into in the long haul as people demand. They naturally incrementally decide they need more services in the areas where they previously wanted none, and it costs money.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. For the committee's edification, we do have in the room Nancy Mead from the court system, online, Marty Parsons from the Department of Natural Resources, Eric Phillips from Land and Resource Management for the Mat-Su Borough, Hugh Leslie from Park and Recreation Management, Mat-Su Borough, Hans Brinke, Alaska State Troopers, Jim Sykes from the Mat-Su Assembly, as well as Bruce Dale from the Department of Fish and Game. Those are all online to answer questions. We do have two members that are invited testimony from Senator Schauer. Are there other questions of the senator before we move into invited testimony? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I'd like to invite, at Senator Schauer's request, Representative Rauscher. He is chairman of the Jonesville Action Committee, to the microphone for invited testimony. Welcome to Senate Finance, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the committee for hearing this bill. The community of Sutton felt a long need for addressing the problems up in the Sutton area up there by the coal mines. So they made two attempts since the 80s to try and find a way to manage the area. Some of the things that didn't happen in those attempts were actually probably getting a hold of all of the users in the group, okay? We have four-wheelers, we have equestrian, we have hikers, we have people who are shooting, we have people who go up there to ski, snow machine, four-wheel. There's a plethora of different types of recreation going on there, and actually to get a hold of all of them was the key. And so what we did when we decided the community council would start a committee called the Jonesville Slipper Lake Action Committee that would actually go and talk to each one of these groups and see what they wanted, what they needed, how they would like to work with each other, how they would like to present their sport, their recreation. We also had motorhomes up there. We had camping. And then we also had the fact that the DNR had put $9 million that they got from the 1977 reclamation fund into the area to reclimate the old coal mines. And that brought in a lot of road stability, parking areas. There is actually a lot more parking area than 300 cars up there. There's enough parking area probably for about 1,200 if you actually count all the different locations right now which are available to them. There's the roads are there. We've put in some trails. We've acquired money from the community for hardening pathways for people to walk on, which four-wheelers can't access. We've got another area which is starting to harden the area for the four-wheelers. We've every spring, we've gone out there to pick up trash and garbage. We've had junk car haulaways. So the community is very involved in the area. We also believe that there is another lease that has come to, I guess, the end. And so their monies for their recreation, their reclamation are also going to be put into the area in the future soon. Every so often, the state of Alaska gets reclamation funds for mining areas that came before 1977 when they didn't put that money forward. And that's how this all began here with those kind of reclamation funds. So we're planning, and we have another bout coming up. So this is how we intend to use those funds to actually help create this area a little bit more to the likings of the management plan. I don't know what more I can tell you, but this is a there, if you look at, there's a handout that came out. I don't know whether you all got it or not, but there's a shooting line. I was up there just yesterday or Sunday, and they've set their targets up in a gravel pit, which is pointing right over the community about half a mile away. There's no backstops or anything, and I don't believe the state can go up there and ask them to take those down because there is no, everybody's allowed to use state land. So you need a management plan to be able to control that, and you can't have that management plan without a public use area. So that's where all this starts, with a public use area. We also have the Chickaloon Village Police Force, who patrol the area now for us, because I'm sure that the State Public Service is not going to be able to patrol it, but they do come for emergencies. We have a letter here that says they will come, and they have. There have been shootings. People have died. A little girl got shot in the leg. People get run over by four-wheelers. That's the need for this area.
Thank you for those comments. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. pardon me, Representative Rauscher. I know you're probably all over this, but we also could, maybe you could might think about working with Fish and Game and DNR to utilize Pittman Roberts and Dingle Johnson funds as you move forward with this project. Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. Thank you. Through the chair, Madam Chair. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Are there questions for the representative? Thank you for addressing Senate Finance today. Mr. Jim Sykes, I have you down for questions, but did you have comments to provide for the Senate Finance Committee before we open the public testimony on Senate Bill 65 from Resources?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to do that. Good morning. For the record, my name is Jim Sykes. I represent District 1 on the Matsu Borough Assembly, which includes the area that includes Jonesville Mine. I would like to let all the members of the committee, to encourage all the members of the committee to enthusiastically support this bill. There's been a lot of information about the war zone nature of the area, similar to what took place at Kinnick River. And in Kinnick River, over the past 10 years, and since the management plan has been developed, the area has gradually changed into a more family-friendly area with a designated shooting range, the Kenny and Patty Barber shooting range, travel improvements, and the nature has just changed from total craziness to almost something that, it's not done yet, but it's been a heck of an improvement, and I think that's what is being looked at by the Sutton community to do there. It's this beautiful area has so much potential, and there was a question about finances, and I've participated in some of the back-of-the-envelope calculations. If an area is developed for recreational opportunities and there is a designated shooting range instead of five or six undesignated ones, it can actually generate some financial support. Maybe not total, but that remains to be seen down the road. But what is important today is for this committee to start the framework that needs to be put in place so that the area is designated as a public use area. That, in turn, will allow the management plan to be developed and put in place. Now, I'd like to speak to the involvement of large numbers of people that have taken place and other organizations. I would like to recognize Dylan Busby, who is a teenager who made this his Alaska Close-Up project. It also helped stimulate the membership of the community in the subcommittee, the Jonesville Slipper Lake Action Committee, that got together with the help of Borough Planning Resources and Recreation and Land Management, DNR troopers. They held meetings for the better part of the year that were well attended, and it's amazing to see the community come together in such a way. They kicked it off with a community petition that had 122 signatures on it. And as I look across the signatures in both Sutton and some from Chickaloon, it really represented well the community. And so I think the success of this project really is dependent on so many people working together, the community energy, and as I mentioned, the troopers, the borough, the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. I think that that portends positive development to change this area from the current craziness into something that people can enjoy that will be valuable to the community and to the region. I think going forward, the borough has already provided some resources, but they have especially committed. You'll find a letter in the documents section from the land manager committing resources such as GIS, such as staff time, and the planning department is also committed to it. Matsu Borough Assembly unanimously passed a resolution that has a lot of the details you've heard about, but they are committed to support the development of a land use plan. And as the last whereas ends, the Borough Assembly enthusiastically supports the establishment of a public use area by the state of Alaska for purposes of recreation in the Jonesville Slipper Lake area. I think if you can kick this off, the activity that has already taken place and the amount of people and organizations that have supported it is indicative of its success. You may have heard Representative Rauscher mention that the community has spent a lot of time and resources cleaning up. I mean, they've taken 20 tons of trash out of there for years. And last year, outside people and outside user groups joined the community cleanup. And I think this is something that everything that's happened so far has been positive. We haven't run into anybody that's against it. I mean, maybe some of the partiers might be against it, but they haven't spoken up yet. And I encourage your support for this bill to start this framework and see if we can make something really positive come of this. And I believe it can happen, and as do many other people who have already participated. And if you have any questions about it, I'd be happy to answer them as the Matsu Borough representative for this area. I've had the pleasure of working with the subcommittee of the community council and a lot of the other folks who have been involved in making sure that they have access to borough resources where possible. So thank you very much, and I hope that all of you work together with your fellow members in the legislature to get this going, because it is really an important thing.
Are there questions from Assemblymember Sykes? Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sykes, just a question for I don't know if someone talked about the square miles, but I just measured it with the legend here. It looks like it's about 20 square miles. Is that right?
I don't recall the exact dimensions. Representative Rauscher would probably have a more exact count, but that does sound right. And most all of it is state land.
Okay. So really the question I was getting toward is most of the damage that you're trying to manage sort of within a distance of the parking area, or is it spread throughout the property?
Most of the damage that has happened is when you first enter the area where the old mining entrance was, there's a slipper lake. And so that area is an area of heavy use. That's where the gravel pit is that was mentioned. It's still an active gravel pit. So that's where a lot of it takes place. And then there's a road that goes around the back of the coal mountains that you can see from the highway. And that road goes back there probably at least 3 miles, maybe more. And people tend to take that mining, it's a mining road. They take that all the way to the end, and that's where you see, you know, anywhere from 3 to 12 shooting ranges get set up, and they're not always pointed away from each other. And so most of the damaged activity takes place in the area that where people mainly enter with and park their RVs and around the lake and on that road that goes around the back of the coal hills. So that's the rest of the area is largely forested, and it has some ATV trails on it. There's a lot of wildlife, and so I expect that area that there could be potential trail development, as has happened in Kinnick River public use area, but it's largely forested and pretty wild.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, no, I just praise for the Senator and Representative Rauscher and your community for coming together. We've had several problematic areas similar to that on the Kenai, and it takes a while to get everyone together so you can make a dramatic difference. But I appreciate your work on pulling all this together.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. It's interesting to see just how much support there is for making this a designation, a public area designation, and to kind of dovetail on some of the comments of how we're going to pay for this. I see once we have a public use area designation, then we can create a public use management plan. I hope to see, hopefully, a nonprofit called Friends of the Jonesville Recreation Area. And then because I see in the bill, the Jonesville public use area may not be managed as a unit of the state park system. So the alternative, and I've seen this Friends of X, Y, and Z all over the state. So there's a lot of public energy. Let's get some public dollars in this nonprofit. It takes about a year to get a nonprofit set up, by the way, from my experience. And maybe some of these dollars can start help offsetting any number of costs. Thanks.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly understand the importance of this to the community and to the bigger, the larger area. Unfortunately, it takes time to create these plans. Just want to make sure, Mr. Sykes, that this would not end the community's involvement. It would not end the assembly's involvement. Is that true?
Yes, Senator Stevens. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, yes. The borough has committed to this. We've committed to it by resolution. The land manager, who is online, is committed to helping assist with the management plan, whatever DNR's parameters are, to make sure this. The borough has been heavily involved in cooperating with DNR at Connect River Public Use Area, although the borough was not on the front end of that one as much as they are and have been on this one. And so I think we're in it for the long haul. Everybody understands the importance of the area, and if we can get this developed, I think the success really will be the community support and all of the other entities and users that have come together to make sure this happens. Out at Connect River Public Use Area, the locals, since the establishment of the area, and including they have DNR staff up there several days a week, but just the establishment of an actual shooting range that's designated has eliminated a lot of problems there. And the locals still go up there. They go on the trails. If they see people in trouble or they see people leaving garbage, they're pretty assertive at saying, hey, you know, you kind of messed this up. We're trying to keep this clean for you and anybody else that comes here. And the community support out in the Butte area going out to Connect River Public Use Area, I sense that the community is equally or more committed in Sutton to seeing that happen. And I would also like to address, I think that the DNR may be able to support it. You would have to ask them this question. I think the reason it's not being considered for a park is I don't think we have many shooting ranges, for example, in parks. But there are other ways to manage public use areas. And if there is potential for a Friends of Jonesville Mine public use area, I will certainly encourage it.
Senator Stevens, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for joining us today in Senate Finance, Assemblymember Sykes.
With that, thank you for the honor.
I'd like to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 65. I am going to take time dated entries into our system, and so I'd like to go to the MATSU LIO first. Patty Barber. Patty, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm Patty Barber, and I support Senate Bill 65 to create the Jonesville Public Use Area. This popular recreational area is experiencing the same problems as what was happening at the Connick River. Since the bill for the Connick River was signed into law in 2005 and the plan put in place in 2008, the problems have been addressed and families are returning to a safer, popular recreational area. I believe this plan for the Jonesville area will address these same problems. Thank you for my testimony.
Thank you for joining Senate Finance today, Patty. Are there questions from committee members? Have a great day, Ms. Barber. The next
Thank
person
you.
Waiting online to testify in the Matsu LAO is Kenny Barber. Kenny, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
My name is Kenny Barber. I live in the Butte area. I support this bill, 65 HBC, or yeah, Senate Bill 65 anyway. I support it. I think the money part of this, part of it, that people were concerned about is like the shooting range that's out there on Maude Road. There's groups like the Trappers Association, AOC, AOAA, all these groups kind of kicked in the money and the volunteer work to build like the benches, the shooting benches and all that stuff. They can do the same thing in Sutton. So, I'd just like to say that I support this, and I think it's important that the public participate and try to help maintain this place up there, like they did out there on the Kinnick. So that's all I got to say. Thanks.
Are there questions from committee members? Kenny, thank you for joining Senate Finance today.
Yep, thank you.
The next person waiting online, well, waiting in the room to testify, Lynn Woods, if you could come to the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Lynn Woods, members of the committee. I just wanted to put a personal face on Sutton. And I happen to live on Jonesville Road. It's the access to that area. And come mid-May, as soon as most of the snow is gone, I pretty much have to leave my place on the weekends. The traffic, the noise, my peace, my quiet, my use of my yard is very, very disturbed. And I've erected fences. I've participated up there in cleanup. I've done things. But I fully realize there are people who use the Great Alaska Outdoors that don't respect other people who live there too. And without this formal designation of a public use area, without a management plan, I don't think things would ever change. And I really want the state legislators' support for our community. I wanted to reclaim the value of my home. And I know that public-private partnerships do work. We have great nonprofits in the valley that help on this, have helped build a hiking trail. I think that we can do this, and we just need your help to get us started. So this is step one, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Ms. Woods, thank you for joining Senate Finance today. I have other people online for questioning, but no other folks signed up to testify. Is there anyone else here in Juneau, online or off net, wishing to testify on Senate Bill 65? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Senator Michicki?
Madam Chair, is Marty Parsons available just for a couple of questions?
Senator Michicki, I'm going to go through all of the folks that are online that are from state departments so that if we have questions or have comments. The first person at Senator Michicki's request, Marty Parsons, are you available from the Department of Natural Resources? Can you provide us any kind of feedback or comments on Senate Bill 65 from DNR's perspective?
Good morning, Madam Chairman. This is Marty Parsons. I am the Deputy Director of the Division of Mining, Land, and Water. We have worked closely with the community on this bill. We have provided fiscal notes for it. It's a very similar situation to what we had in the Kinnick public use area, which has been mentioned earlier today. And so I think it's an admirable program and an objective for the community that DNR would be happy to work with.
Senator Michicki.
Thank you. So, Mr. Parsons, that's I have two questions for you. One is it problematic for there not to really be DNR authority if it's not state parkland? How does that work, and how has it worked at Kinnick Arm for the department?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, as part of this bill, authority, enforcement authority is provided to the Department of Natural Resources, similar to the authority that we have in the Kinnick public use area, where a bail schedule is set by the Supreme Court, and we do have a basically a sworn individual who can enforce and write citations. So without the action of the legislature, DNR would not have that authority. But like I say, we currently do have that in the Kinnick public use area, and this bill does provide that enforcement authority to DNR.
Senator Machiki, follow up.
Just to follow up, thank you. So does it work when you have a 20-square-mile area? I mean, have you seen dramatic changes in the Kinnick area, or is it just a long, slow process before you see any real forward motion on the behavior that's been problematic?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, it's not a rapid change, like overnight within the first year, but it is a steady change as you have people out there working the area, engaging with the public, talking to them about the uses of the area, and with some enforcement authority and support from the troopers. In a relatively short period of time, we have seen a dramatic change in the activities at the Kinnick public use area. You'll remember it used to be the spring cleanup from Jim Creek, where we'd go out with trailers and remove abandoned burnt vehicles and other trash that was left out there. That has virtually disappeared. So there has been a significant change in a relatively short period of time.
Thank you for those comments. Other questions for Department of Natural Resources from committee members? Mr. Hans Brink from Alaska State Troopers. Hans, do you have any comments for the committee to consider from a public safety perspective?
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity, committee members. My name is Colonel Hans Brinke, for the record. I don't have any particular comments other than mimicking some of the other testimony that we're here. I was a commander out in the Matsu Valley just under 7 years prior to taking over as the director of Alaska State Troopers here in Anchorage. Dealing with the Kinnick public use area after its initiation, there was a dramatic decrease in issues that were happening out there. That was partially due to RSAs or the reimbursable services agreements paying for some law enforcement activities out there when troopers were available. At the same time, individuals have then moved up towards the Jonesville Mine area to recreate at the same time. And I can corroborate all the testimony again on the usages up there with the gunfire, the vehicles that are driving up there, the trash that's there, taking my family up there at the same time. Kept me from going up there at certain times of the year, certain times of the week, because it was a little bit more dangerous. Trying to get Alaska State Troopers up there for proactive enforcement. If we happen to be in the Sutton area, we would go up there and try and show that presence. With the lack of resources that we're currently under with our recruitment and retention issues, we're not able to do those proactive enforcement. So having a management plan is a good idea, but again, through the RSA processes, if we have that put into place, it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to have those resources or the Alaska State Troopers or Alaska Wildlife Troopers available to even work those areas.
Are there questions from committee members? Colonel Brinke, thank you for joining Senate Finance today. Bruce Dale, Department of Fish and Game. Mr. Dale, welcome to Senate Finance. Do you have comments on Senate Bill 65 from a Department of Fish and Game perspective?
Good morning. This is Bruce Dale with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I don't have any comments. I'm just available for questions.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dale, is there sport fishing opportunities up there inside this area?
That's right. Senator Bishop, through the chair, there are at least two stocked lakes in the area, perhaps three, that are very popular for fishing.
And you stock those on an annual basis?
I believe they're stocked on an annual basis, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions for committee members? Ms. Nancy Mead, I see in the audience. Ms. Mead, do you have any comments from the courts? Ms. Mead is shaking her head no. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, here to answer any questions.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Mead, with this bail schedule that's in our notebook here for Kinnick River Public Use Area, would that be similar to the Jonesville schedule?
Through the Chair, Senator Bishop, I would expect it would look very similar to that. The Supreme Court adopts a bail schedule at the suggestion and with drafts proposed by the department. And it's a fairly routine thing that the court system does.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mead. Are there other questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Mead. We do have two others from the Mat-Su area. We have Eric Phillips from Land and Resource Manager for the Mat-Su Borough. Mr. Phillips, welcome to Senate Finance. Do you have a perspective to offer the committee on Senate Bill 65?
Don't have a lot of comments. I think Assemblyman Sykes covered the issues fairly well. Other than to say I did provide a letter of support for establishing the public use area last year, and we still believe it's a good idea. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Questions from committee members? Last person in the queue here in Senate Finance, Hugh Leslie, Park and Rec Manager, Mat-Su Borough. Hugh, are you there?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just some comments in brief. Our division, which is part of land management, does support the plan. One of the things I do want to mention is this has the opportunity to be an economic generator for the community. I think it already is, although I don't think that's been quantified in terms of sales of fuel, sales of groceries, things of that nature. And we're also working very closely with the state of Alaska on the Kinnick River Public Use Area. We've made a significant investment out there in terms of amenities, and it's working out well for us.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Leslie, thank you for joining Senate Finance today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop, are you prepared to cover the fiscal note?
I am, Madam Chair.
Certainly. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the sponsor or anyone in that has testified can come up with how the boundaries were selected?
Senator Schauer. Senator Schauer, Senator Hoffman has a question regarding the boundaries and how they were established.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Senator. The boundaries were established with the help of the Mat-Su Borough, the various communities involvement groups, including Representative Rauscher, worked with the Mat-Su Borough land management to find the boundaries, and then based on their, I guess to use the correct term, the plots that they had, they were able to, within the state boundaries, plot those all the way around. So this was done initially by the community members to find what the uses would be, and then they used the borough assembly so that they would do it through the normal process.
And the question is, the adjacent boundaries, does the Mat-Su Borough own any of the adjoining properties?
Senator Schauer.
I would like to defer that, ma'am, to...
Mr. Sykes, are you online?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. Through Madam Co-Chair,
there is only one fairly small piece of borough land, which is about 40 acres, that is contained within the boundaries. As I recall, all the rest of it is state land.
Senator Hoffman, could you clarify the question?
My question is, the adjoining boundaries, are there any adjoining properties that are owned by the borough to this proposed
Senator Hoffman, I do not believe there are any adjoining boundaries owned by the borough, just a piece that is totally enclosed within the borough, within the selected boundaries. And if there's any difference, maybe the land manager can address that.
Thank you, Assemblymember Sykes. Mr. Phillips, you're the land and resource manager for MATSU. Could you answer Senator Hoffman's question?
I can't directly address it. I don't have the a map sitting here in front of me. As Mr. Sykes said, the only borough land impact that I'm aware of is a 40-acre inholding within the boundaries. But I honestly cannot answer the question about adjacent lands. Sorry.
Mr. Phillips, it's property that would be owned by the MATSU. If you could get that information back to the committee, that would be helpful. I'd like to invite Representative Rauscher to the microphone. Did you have information on this topic, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rauscher, yes, there is a couple pieces of property. Mostly they were easements given to Usability that they butt up against. And then there's another small parcel at the bottom, but they're not large parcels of land that the borough owns there. Most of them are native, which we've excluded out of it just to keep it all on the state land.
Senator Schauer, if you could confirm with the MATSU Borough directly and provide us information that the next time this bill is up, that would be helpful. Senator Hoffman.
That's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions on Senate Bill 65? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Schauer, do you have any closing comments for this before we take up the fiscal note for consideration today?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to highlight that, as Senator Bicicchi asked earlier, there is a lot of community involvement. There is an agreement from the MATSU Borough that they will use their resources to help create a management plan if DNR decides to execute that. So those are good questions that we need to answer, but I do believe there will be great involvement from the community. There already is, and they're already spending their time and money. So if we can focus that correctly, I think this is something that we can do at minimal cost in the future and maintain that. So, again, just thank you for your time this morning and for your consideration.
Senator Bicicchi.
No, thank you for that. I'm actually encouraged by the community's action. We had a problem on the banks of the Kenai for years and really didn't know how to attack the outreach and education to the public, and we put together a group called Streamwatch, and we took private contributions. They had uniforms. They went through a kind of initiation every year, and then they'd go out to the campgrounds and the different places where people would congregate and talk about proper disposal of carcasses and where the trash should go and which banks they shouldn't trample on. It's worked really, really well. So it's just a model that you may all consider as you develop going forward. But I'm a believer that when the community is behind something like that, the changes can happen relatively quickly. And so good luck.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments, Senator Bicicchi. Any other questions to the sponsor? Thank you, Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop, could you cover the fiscal note for us?
Madam Chairman, thank you. We have three fiscal notes in front of us today. Two of them have zero fiscal impact, and those are Departments of Fish and Game and the Department of Public Safety. Fiscal note number one, Department of Natural Resources, fire suppression, land and water resources, allocation, mining land and water, and the OMB component number is 3002. Fiscal impact is zero, but will require regulation change. The bill would provide the statutory structure that creates the Jonesville public use area. Once the public use area is established, there will need to be a management plan for the area developed to DNR, and they will conduct this work in conjunction with both local government and nonprofits in the region. The work conducted by DNR will be completed as staff time permits. and the department expects this process to take 3 to 5 years to complete with existing staff. And I'll emphasize what Senator Marchicki spoke to earlier on this 3 to 5 years. I would just put all the oars in the water with resources at the local level to help the department execute this plan in 3 years versus 5 years for everyone's benefit and then Ms. Wood so she can get her quality of life back at her home. So, all right, with that, the department does not anticipate any cost outside of the zero fiscal note at this time.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. With that, I'd ask the committee to set this bill aside. I'd like amendments due by 5 o'clock today. If there is a technical amendment and we need to extend that time period, I certainly will consider that. With that, we'll set this aside, and any concerns, comments, or questions on SB 65, if you could get to those to my office as soon as possible. Brief at ease. We're back on the record, Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. The time is 10:13 a.m. The next item before us is House Bill 236, an act extending the Alaska Senior Benefit Program. I'd like to invite Representative Scott Kawasaki, his staff Mercedes Colbert, to the microphone. Representative Kawasaki was here earlier today. I'm sure he's on other state business at this time. Mercedes, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mercedes Colbert, staff to Representative Kawasaki, House District 1, Fairbanks. Thank you for hearing HB 236 this morning and for the many members of this body who have already signed on as co-sponsors. House Finance Committee's substitute before the committee, HB 236 version D, would simply extend the Senior Benefits Program sunset clause to the year 2024. Without legislative action, the program would end on June 30th, 2018. This program provides MAS cash assistance to help eligible low-income seniors pay for expenses like food, housing, utilities, transportation, and prescription medication. The Senior Benefits Program is a successor to the Longevity Bonus Program, which was created in 1972, and the Senior Benefits Program we know today was established in 2007. As of December 2017, the program currently aids more than 11,000 Alaskan seniors ages 65 and older. The benefit is based on income at 75%, 100%, and 175% at the federal poverty level. By statute, those who qualify receive benefits from $125, $175, or $250 a month, subject to legislative appropriation. Seniors must be a resident of the state, a citizen of the U.S., a qualified alien, and cannot be incarcerated at a public or private mental institution, or a resident of a nursing home as defined in Title 8, or a resident of a Pioneer Home or Alaska Veterans Home. Income eligibility is based on gross annual income, does not include permanent fund dividends, and counts before taxes or health insurance premiums are taken into account. Assets are not counted towards their income limits. Last September, there was a three-hour statewide listening session. We heard from hundreds of seniors by emails and telephone, and they all voiced their support. And most of the people who testified received the $76 a month payment to voice how just $912 a year can make a major difference to their quality of life. And I think that's all I can say, and I'm available for any questions. It has a long bipartisan history in protecting your seniors, and we appreciate your support.
Are there questions of the bill sponsor? Thank you, Mercedes, for bringing the bill before us. I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 236. We do have some invited testimony. 1 second. Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I'd like to invite Monica Windham, the Director of Public Assistance. Monica, are you online? Thank you, Monica. Ms. Windham, your testimony for the record.
For the record, my name is Monica Windham. I'm the Director for the Division of Public Assistance. As Mercedes said, this benefit helps a lot of seniors remain independent. It helps them pay for transportation and food and medicine that they need to survive, and we are in support of this bill.
Are there questions from committee members? Ms. Windham, can you talk to me about the eligibility requirements a little bit more in depth and what you do to confirm eligibility as well as residency? for those that are applying for this service from the state.
Sure. Madam Chair, an individual that wants senior benefits has to submit an application and report their income to us. We verify that income several different ways. If they have earnings, we can talk to the employer, or there's an interface that we use called the work number, where that employers report wages to that interface. We look at Social Security interfaces to see the amount of Social Security they're receiving. And we may call collateral contacts, so somebody that knows them, to verify their living situation. The Social Security interface will also tell us about their residency and their citizenship. And once we've done all that, then we determine the amount of their income and therefore the amount of the benefit that they're eligible for.
Ms. Windham, do you run a cross-check with the qualifications for the permanent fund dividend to understand whether the recipients are in-state or out-of-state?
Madam Chair, we do have an interface with the Division of Department of Revenue to check for eligibility for PFD.
Thank you. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. What about income that's generally not on a W-2 but on a K-1 or a 1099 or something of that nature that's not as easily verifiable? What do you do in that case?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, we can request a copy of their tax return if they have other types of income. We can pin their case and ask them to report those other types of income to us and verify those other types of income.
Senator Von Imhoff, follow up.
So assuming that in their application they list all of their income, then you decide how to verify it depending on how they list it. But if they, for whatever reason, don't list their income, you don't ask for taxes automatically. Is that what I'm hearing?
Through the chair, that's correct. Although, we do have a fraud unit that will investigate any time we have a suspicion or there's a report that someone may have other income or a situation that they have not reported to us, and they will look into it.
Can you state for the record how many folks are on or in receipt for this program? How many seniors qualify, and then which level?
As of last December, the end of December is the last count I have, we had 11,322 individuals receiving senior benefits. At the 125 level, that's the level that's currently receiving $76 a month, we had 5,183. The $175 benefit level, we had 4,597. The $250 benefit level, 1,493.
Senator Stevens.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question I'm sure you can't answer, but I'll just pose it. And it's so important that we have really healthy communities that have both seniors and young people. And I would ask you how many folks, but I know that's impossible to come up with an answer there, but could you help us understand, just so I know, the 75% or 75% level, how much are we talking about in income to of the poverty level? Just have an idea. I think it's pretty low, but I'd like to know that.
Through the chair, 100% of the poverty level, I believe, and I'm sorry, I don't have those numbers with me, but I believe it's around $1,600 a month.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Is this program at 100% the poverty level or 203%?
Madam Chair, it varies. So the different benefit levels depend on what level of poverty you're at. Let me see my cheat sheet here. I apologize. I'm afraid I don't have the poverty levels with me. I believe Mercedes had them, though.
175%.
Thank you.
The levels?
Yes. Mercedes, can you share? I apologize. Calling my lifeline.
Mercedes, if you could provide the committee, Senator Stevens is asking for the income level. We've been given the monthly income, so if you could give an annual benefit for someone who would qualify, and then the percentages that are actually used as the criteria to filter the candidates.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's Mercedes Colbert, staff to represent Kawasaki. Through the chair, Senator Stevens. 75% of the federal poverty line, they receive $250 monthly payment. An individual, for the 75% federal poverty line, an individual must make $11,295 annually. That's $942 a month for their income. A married couple would be $15,218 for that 75% level. For 100% of the poverty line, they receive $175 a month. Their individual income must be $15,060, and a married couple would be $20,290. And at the 175% poverty line, in order to receive a 76-monthly payment under the current program right now for the current appropriation, an individual would make $26,355 a month, a married couple $35,508 a month. And the senior benefits fact sheet was provided in members' packets as well.
Those comments are there. Senator Stevens, follow up.
Oh, thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mercedes. Other questions for Mercedes? Other questions for Ms. Windham? Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person from invited testimony is Deb Etheridge, a Deputy Director of the Division of Senior and Disability Services. Ms. Etheridge, are you in the room or online?
For the record, Deb Etheridge, Deputy Director in Senior and Disability Services, and I have called in and am available for questions.
Do you have any comments on the bill before us?
I have no comments.
Thank you. That concludes invited testimony. Moving to general public calling in, we'll go to the Anchorage LAO first, and we do this by timestamps, and the chair tries actively to pursue those appropriately. At the Anchorage LIO, we have Ken Hollander. Ken, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
If you could identify yourself for the record and then please provide the committee testimony on House Bill 236.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ken Hollander. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP Alaska. We appreciate the opportunity to give comment on House Bill 236. First of all, AARP absolutely supports reauthorization of the Senior Benefits Program. Our position is that this is a must-pass legislation as a critical safety net program for thousands of Alaskans over 65. But secondly, we urge you to reconsider to restore the money taken from beneficiaries at 175% of federal poverty level 2 years ago, keeping in mind that that 175% means that they cannot make any more than that. It also means that there may be many people who are just a dollar over the 100% poverty level who would otherwise be receiving that benefit. This represents almost a $600 a year reduction in irreplaceable income for the beneficiaries in this category. It can't be replaced because people in this category who receive benefits, whose average age is 75 and whose oldest beneficiary is 104, are likely not going to be able to go out and get a job, ask for a raise, or ask mom and dad for help. It is absolutely lost permanent income. The $76 a month should not become a new baseline with the reauthorization, that with the projections of the fiscal note over the period of reauthorization will actually continue to take increasing amounts from beneficiaries down to $36 a month. The money required for restoration of the benefit is an accounting problem for the legislature and for the administration. For beneficiaries, it represents the ability to make choices between the necessity and the necessity. It reduces the risk of displacement from home to a more expensive level of care that would inevitably require more state funds. The Senior Benefits Program is not a bricks and mortar program. Money paid out is spent by beneficiaries directly back into the Alaska economy. Thirdly, AARP takes the position that assisted living home residents should not be eligible for the senior benefit program. The Pioneers homes are all licensed as assisted living homes, and residents of those homes and the veterans homes are not eligible under the current rules for senior benefits. AARP's position is that other assisted living homes should be treated the same. Otherwise, the senior benefit funds are not going to individuals trying to make ends meet and maintain independence in their own homes. Rather, those funds are being used to subsidize assisted living care. These residents are already safe, their needs are met, and they likely never even see their benefit. We hold that the senior benefits should be targeted specifically to the people who are living independently in the community, not to assisted living home costs of care. We recommend that the program be amended to exclude assisted living residents from eligibility. So finally, we urge reauthorization with these recommendations. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Are there questions from committee members? Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if we have a letter from Mr. Helander from AARP on record.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. The next person waiting to testify in the Kodiak LIO, let me get that, is Bill Williams. I'm sorry, I'm going to the wrong spot. Give me one second. In the Kodiak LIO, David Lacter. David, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record.
My name is David Blackheader. I live in Kodiak. I'm the chair of the Commission on Aging.
Your testimony, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, my wife and I are facing on Social Security. Our Social Security check gets in the bank at the third of the month. Our rent is due first of the month, and we own our own trailer. But our space rent is due the first. And when we, if we pay it by the first, we get a $60 discount on our rent. So many, many times, in fact, most of the times, the we're on tier three, the $76 a piece, that helps us pay that rent on time. So we actually are gaining that $60, which actually amounts to a week's groceries. And so, and sometimes there's other times that this comes with senior benefit program comes at the end, towards the end of the month, and this helps us in like this month. It helps us buy parts for our car, which we need to go to the doctor's office and get groceries. Thank you for this privilege.
Mr. Blackner, thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today and waiting to do that. The next person at the Kodiak LIO is Gordon Glazer. Gordon, are you there?
Hello. My name is Gordon Glazer. Privilege of the record. My name is Gordon Glazer. I'm a member of the Commission on Aging as well. Also the past president of the Anchors Senior Activity Center. I'd like to echo other comments. I will try not to be repetitive. As people point out, this is income-based. It's primarily targeted toward the older and more frail. This is something that ensures people's dignity and independence, and it keeps them out of institutions. When we look at and get feedback from our constituency, from Fairbanks to Wrangell, the top five priorities, whether people use them or don't use them personally, is the senior benefits program. And let me add, neither my wife nor I nor any family member need this program, and hopefully never do. But it is a significant component for keeping people independent and allowing them to have some dignity in the last phase of their lives. I thank the chair and the committee for your time, and I would welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Glazer. And Mr. Glazer, as well as the previous testifier, were off net. Mr. Glazer's in Anchorage. Are there questions from committee members?
Madam Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, appreciate Gordon and David before him, their work on the Commission on Aging. You heard the comments from the gentleman from AARP about excluding folks who are in assisted living homes. We all already exclude Pioneer Home and Veterans Homes. His suggestion, I believe, was that those who are in assisted living homes should not be receiving this. Do you have any reflection on that?
I can't speak for the Commission on the Senior Activity Center specifically on that since we haven't examined it. I think it is something worth examining. I would say, however, from a broader public policy perspective, once a service has been put in, it's very difficult to remove. And so I would examine it for maybe new people coming into the system. But for those people who are dependent on that type of that money each month, removing it would have consequences that I would really want to examine and be very hesitant to do. Again, these people don't have an option necessarily to go to mommy and daddy or your family members. They may have outlived many of their friends and sometimes their own children. And so I'd be happy to examine it, but it has not come up in front of the commission. And as I say, in general policy, removing of a service has consequences that I would examine before doing. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand your point. Thanks so much. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. The next person here in Juneau is Bill Williams. Mr. Williams, if you would join us at the microphone, your name for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
For the record, my name is Bill Williams, and I am a service coordinator through Southeast Senior Services. Thank you for allowing me to be here. My job is that I work with seniors in Juneau who live in public housing, Section 8 housing, so low income, and I try to help them live more independently so that we don't put a burden on the Pioneer Home because there's not a lot of place there and the wait is very long. So we work together with elders and their family to try to get them to live more independently. And most of my clients that I deal with have senior benefits. And I want to share just one of the stories with you to kind of put a face on the people who senior benefits helps. I have a client who is deaf, can't hear anything, lives by themselves, and their family is nowhere nearby. Whenever I came into her life, I found out that she only got disability, which was about $630 a month. So she lives in an apartment that she has to pay for, that she has to pay for her lights, and then adding on to that, she has to buy food. But she has no money for food. So if it wasn't for eating at the senior center one time a day and taking home leftovers from there, she wouldn't have any food at all. So whenever I got involved in her case, we ended up signing her up for senior benefits. And so her income, when she was accepted, went from $630 a month plus $250. That's a 33% increase in her income per month, which allowed her to be able to buy food so that she could survive. And as I have been in the lives of these elders, my own mother, she's nearing 80 now, and I would hope that were she in that similar situation, she would have someone who could help her out to get to the position where she can live more independently, so she would have food. And in this lady that's my client's house, she has no furniture. She has plastic chairs to sit in. And it's a very lonely existence being deaf and poor. And to have a state that will stand by you and help you in your most dire of time after you spent your life living in a state and being a part of this great state we have. To know that we give a little bit back is very, very important and gives them a little more honor in their life, in their golden years that are not very golden.
Questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want some clarification. We've heard the recommendation from AARP folks that we might exclude those in assisted living. Now, you mentioned Section 8 housing. Would that be considered assisted living as well?
Through the chair. Senator, no, that's not assisted living. Section 8 housing is government subsisted housing where depending on their income, they pay a certain percentage. I can't speak much to what the fellow from AARP said. However, I will say this. In the people who we have assisted in transitioning into the Pioneer Home or other such places, Medicaid typically, whenever you're talking about that poor, Medicaid will pay for them being there and take care of a lot of that. Whereas the folks that I deal with, they're living independently at home and they're just trying to survive from day to day.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today.
Thank you.
And thank you for your children or accompaniment today. They have behaved very well. We appreciate them watching government in process. The next person waiting to testify, Mr. Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, if you could state your name for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Mike Coons. I'm the president of the Alaska chapter of the Association of Mature American Citizens, AMAC. AMAC is a grassroots conservative senior advocacy organization. The Alaska chapter of AMAC supports the senior benefits program and supports SB 170. Of course, is the information, the Commission on Aging put forward an information and fact sheet, and it relates to the budget. And I want to read some quotes. Payment levels depend on the available state funding and how many people apply and qualify for the program. But the state budget cannot support the original amounts of under 25, 175, and 250. Regulations allow for changes to be made for all eligible program participants. They received $47 for July because the budget was not finalized in time to make changes for the July benefits, and the monthly payment for the highest level, highest income level was reduced to $47 from $125 on March 2016 due to the state's limited budget for state fiscal year 2016. What is disturbing the most is that this year, like last year, the House budget is going through the roof. Equally disturbing is, like in 2017, the House is dragging its feet on the budget and knows that the bloated budget that they will most likely pass will have a huge fight in the Senate. Sadly, vulnerable seniors will once again be caught between the rock and the hard place because the Democrat majority in the House is willing to cause a fight that is not needed if the budget was reasonable and sustainable. Major issue is supporting Medicaid expansion that pits seniors on Medicare against able-bodied non-seniors. With this budget the House is putting forward, I fear a repeat of past years and reductions in the senior benefit. All that said, the Alaska chapter of AMAC does support the senior benefits program in a much reduced budget and a timely passage of a reasonable and sustainable budget.
Are there questions from committee members? Mr. Coons, thank you for calling in and testifying before Senate Finance today. The next person from Kisilov, George Pierce. George, if you would identify yourself for the record and then please proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thanks for taking my testimony. My name is George Pierce. I'm calling from Kisilov, Alaska, and I'm representing me and my wife. You know, our seniors are in an economy. They live here, spend their money here. You know, you folks give thousands of dollars to nonprofits for community revenue sharing. Why would you not support seniors in the same community? The senior benefits help seniors to continue to live here instead of leaving. In September, the House Health and Social Services Committee held statewide listening sessions for seniors. Hundreds of seniors were heard from. The senior benefit helps 12,000 low-income seniors. They use the monthly payments to buy essential necessities. It's hard living on a fixed income. We live in the richest state, and we can help our seniors. Don't let this program lapse over political infighting or partisanship. Vote yes. And there are more people testifying than just AARP. So I hope you listen to those as much as you did AARP. So I encourage you to vote yes on this and extend it. Thank you for taking my testimony.
Mr. Pierce, thank you for calling in and testifying. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, the next person waiting to testify is Jane Andren. Jane? If you'd identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jane Andren. I live in Douglas, Alaska. I am what I hope to be is a gracefully aging woman, but I'm also here to testify as an AARP volunteer. As you've heard from Ken Helander, we support this bill and the extension of the Senior Benefits Program. I think it's important to note that people who most benefit from this are older women who have a lower earning potential throughout the course of their lives and often outlive their spouse, thereby looking at, as they age, reduced income levels, resources. Also, rural Alaskans, especially those that are living a subsistence lifestyle, are very dependent on this type of money, this money to help meet things like their heating oil bills, electricity, those things. And also the oldest Alaskans, those in their 80s and 90s who are on a fixed income and are generally dealing with more extensive health concerns. I want to reemphasize what you're hearing today, the need for not only for the Senior Benefits Program to continue, but also the need to put back the funding necessary for people at 101% to 175% of the poverty level, from $76 a month to $125 a month. Thank you.
That bell was not for you. If you have other comments, I'm sorry, I didn't restart it. So if you have other comments, please proceed.
Thank you. Actually, that was the sum of it.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else on line, off net, or in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 236? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. We are going to hold on the fiscal note and work with the department. The current fiscal note anticipates no increase, which is not what the program does, so it's a bit in reverse. So we'll work with the department on that. With that, we'll set this bill aside. If there are amendments from committee members, if you could have those to me by Friday at 5 p.m. Is there anything else to come before the committee? On tomorrow's agenda, we have confirmation hearings from the Department of Revenue, Mr. Sheldon Fisher, the State Assessment Review Board, Mr. William Westover, and the University of Alaska Board of Regents, Mr. Joey Sweet. Also on tomorrow's agenda is an introduction for HB 124 Benefit Corporations. With that, we're adjourned.